Hi, Disney fans. This week, we're talking Earth Month. We're looking at some of the incredible ways Disney has celebrated this beautiful planet, not only all month long, but for nearly three decades through the Disney Conservation Fund. And since the 1950s, through Walt Disney's True Life Adventures films.
We'll hear from Roy Conley, producer of the latest Disney nature film, Tiger, now streaming on Disney+, as well as from Becky Klein, director of the Walt Disney Archives.
I'm Lisa.
I'm Hunter.
And this is D23 Inside Disney.
Happy Earth Month, Lisa.
Happy Earth Month, Hunter.
Did you know Earth Month is an offshoot of Earth Day, which originally started on April 22nd, 1970? I don't think I realized it was around that long.
Me either. That's super cool.
What kinds of things do you do, Lisa, to, you know, Disney's so much about like conservation. What kind of stuff do you do in your day-to-day life?
You know, I think that's what I love about Earth Month is it gives you like a good opportunity to like take stock, take inventory on what we do, because we do things actually in our day to day that we don't even realize that are, you know, conserving. And then also we take action in addition to that. I realize that I definitely don't print things that much. Like it's very rare that I actually print anything. I have a reusable water bottle. Those are kind of like the day to day. And then one thing that I did few months back was I volunteered with Tree People, and I actually was able to plant a few trees in a local community in Los Angeles. So that was really cool for me. I would say it's just a great way to connect with people who are also aware, and we're united in that idea, right, to help conservation efforts. So a few things for me. What about you, Hunter?
No, that's so awesome. Planting trees rules. Yeah, similar to you, it's like little things add up, day-to-day things like using more energy efficient light bulbs. I've replaced all the light bulbs in my house like that. Growing up, my parents were very big on not wasting any water. I grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is a desert. So shorter showers, you know, not leaving the sink on too long while you're brushing your teeth. All these little things really add up.
It's so true. I love that we have our own ways of conserving, but I think it's really important to recognize the Walt Disney Company as well and the latest campaign that's coming from National Geographic. Our home is the latest campaign celebrating Earth Month, and it really is spotlighting the unique ecosystems, rich biodiversity, and diverse cultures and communities of the planet we call home. I don't know about you, but I actually saw this on Disney Plus the other day, and it really does. It brings you into some of these incredible stories that we're excited to tell people about. And some of those, of course, are the Disney nature films. I'm really excited about Tiger because it's now streaming on Disney Plus. Okay, can you believe, though, it's been 15 years since Disney Nature released its first film, Earth? Hunter, do you have a favorite Disney Nature film?
I'm a big Disney Nature film fan. I'm not kidding. I remember when I first saw the trailer for Monkey Kingdom, I was so excited. One of my favorite trailers of all time is for Penguins because it starts out really intense. It's like down in Antarctica, you know, there's all sorts of crazy wild animals. And Steve, like this cute little penguin. Another thing growing up, I was obsessed with penguins and I was obsessed with Disney. And when the two come together, my mind was blown. So Penguins is my favorite. What about you, Lisa?
Okay, I love that story, by the way. And you're right, it's the animals that we connect with, and I love these Disney nature films for doing that. So I would say one of mine is Chimpanzee. I really actually remember seeing this one in the theater, and I fell in love with a chimpanzee named Oscar. So that one was very near and dear to my heart.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to Roy Conley about the latest film, Tiger. It's amazing how we feel so close to these animals, getting these up-close and personal shots. I can't wait to hear more about how they pulled that off. Roy Conley, of course, is a longtime Walt Disney Animation Studios producer who's been involved with Disney Nature for several years now. So he has a really interesting perspective on the history of these films and can tell us all about this month's premiere.
Oh, we love Roy. And you know what? I'm particularly excited about this one. Tiger is narrated by Priyanka Chopra Jonas. So let's get right into it. Hi, Roy. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. I'm very excited.
We're so delighted to have you here. We're such big fans because you've produced classic award-winning films, I should say, for Disney, like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Tangled, and Big Hero 6. But what inspired the shift a decade ago to also move into producing Disney nature films?
It was a very fortunate happenstance. I had actually been asked, because I had run the Paris studio back at the end of the 90s, by Jean-Francois Camilleri, who started Disney Nature, to come on and help. But at that point, I was producing a film called Tangled, and I just didn't have the time. And about 6 years later, I was reapproached and asked to help out on Born in China. And it just so happened that I had a wedge of time to do that, and initially went in to just help with story, and then in the end end up producing it. And then since then, I've produced every film since then with my incredible partners from Bristol. And I love working on these films because they're such a part of the Disney DNA. You know, Walt started True Life Adventures back in 1948, and that ran through 1960. And the reemergence of Disney Nature really is a continuation of that phenomenal legacy.
Your body of work is legendary, Roy, and I love how you're carrying on the legacy of Walt and of Disney Nature. For the film Tiger, I'd love to know more about the actual tigers that you follow in the film. How do you go about finding the right animals that will make a great story?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, when I started working on Disney Nature, I did a little straw poll in the animation studio and asked people what their favorite animal was. And hands down, the favorite animal in the animation studio is the tiger. So we knew that there was something there. And when we went into discussions about filming the tiger, there was big questions because they're the most elusive animal there is to film. It's really, really difficult. But thanks to technology and thanks to equipment that is being developed, we were able to really get up close with these creatures. And again, I give all the credit to these films, to the guys in the field. The folks that come in and work on these films and are in the field, they're just brilliant. They're the explorers of today. They were able to bring in a set of equipment that allowed us to get closer than anyone's ever gotten to filming the cubs, and also intimate moments like in the marsh when they're splashing around in the water. You know, remote cameras that can be controlled from literally a mile away, servos and can, you know, literally can follow the action. And then these amazing gyroscopic cameras that you can hang off of a Jeep and keep steady as you're following the tiger through the forest. It's always a question of luck in terms of the character that you're going to film. And in this particular case, we were lucky enough to find Ambar. It's very seldom that a tiger has four cubs. Once we had her, it was like, okay, this is going to be magic.
It sounds a little bit like you are all playing casting director in a way. And like you said, it's a little bit of magic there to find the right tiger, but you did. And that's absolutely incredible. I will say that I fell in love with this particular story, like you said, and the cubs as well. And I think it's really interesting how the tiger, like you said, is elusive. But what would you say are other parallels that can be drawn between the lives of tigers and the lives of humans? Like, are there parenting similarities? Do they have friends? Are they playful?
Yeah, definitely. Amazingly playful. You see that in the film. They love playing with one another. I think Ambar is kind of like the exceptional mother. She is really, truly just so protective and instructive and really knows how to deal with, you know, raising four kids in the wild. That said, I think that the amazing thing for me in tigers is their eyes. You can see the thought process in these creatures. And to me, that's the magical aspect of the film. When I see that shot of Ambar and see the eyes and see the thought process, it's a little magic.
Yes, magic is the right word, truly. I love in documentaries when up front they kind of tell you about like how we did it. Early on in this documentary, you say that it took 1,500 days of filming. It's over 5 years. How do you manage or oversee a shoot of that size?
Well, this is, again, where my partners from Bristol are phenomenal. I focus on the story element of it. I'm not hanging in the field with those guys. Those guys that are in the field are brilliant. I mean, they're biologists, they're animal behavioralists, and they know so much about the animal before they go into the field. And that knowledge is absolutely instrumental. And in this particular case, I think the biggest challenge for me was making sure that we were able to maintain the shoot because we had to actually delay a couple of times because of COVID. And, you know, once we knew that we could get in there. We had this amazing team, Martin Kolbeck, Tom Walker, Kalyan Varma, Pooja Ratha. These are cinematographers that get such amazing footage. And from that footage, the story evolves. You know, you walk in with an idea of what the story is going to be, but it isn't until you get that imagery that you know what the story you're going to tell is going to be.
It really is incredible storytelling, like you're saying, and it is a bit serendipitous, but very, very skilled, right? And so much work goes into it. And so we're big fans of stories, and there's another story here as well. So as opposed to tigers, the stars of Tigers on the Rise are people, specifically those working to ensure that people and tigers can safely cohabitate. Who do we meet in that film, and how are they working on behalf of tigers?
Well, this is where you get to meet some amazing. Bilal Habib, who is one of our scientific consultants, is a major star in that piece. Not to mention, you meet Kalyan and you meet Pooja in that film. It's really a testament to India, to the government, to communities, and to individuals who have basically gone in and helped the conservation effort of tigers in a way that has been extremely successful. 20 years ago, there was about 1,400 tigers in the wild. Today, there's about 3,600. So it's more than doubled.
Wow.
And this has really been an effort that has been a concerted effort to make this happen. And the respect that they have for this magical being is impressive. And I have to say, one of the things that we do with every Disney Nature film is have a companion piece. Oftentimes, it's about the shooting process. But in this particular case, we really felt it was about the conservation story that we really wanted to share, because we, as individuals, can contribute to that conservation effort everywhere. I live in California, and we have the amazing mountain lions that roam our hills. And it's so important to protect them and protect all animals in our environment.
So Priyanka Chopra Jonas and Blair Underwood are the narrators for Tiger and Tigers on the Rise, respectively. How did they come aboard the project, and what's your role in working with them?
Well, it was clear at the very beginning of this that we wanted somehow to culturally connect with India. You know, the Indian jungles, the Indian forests are magical. And we definitely wanted Priyanka for a couple of reasons. One, I think it tied into that culture, but also she has the most magnificent voice. There's a gravitas to that voice that is really, really outstanding. And we had such a great time working with her. She actually has adopted two tigers in the wild.
What?
It's really something that she's committed to. The other thing we did culturally is we brought in Nitin Swaini, who is the composer. And Nitin is a phenomenal composer that brings in that flavor of India that is terrific. And then for Tigers on the Rise, Blair Underwood is our amazing narrator. I love working with Blair. I've actually done three projects with Blair now. He loves doing the behind the scenes because it really gets into the nitty-gritty of how you make these films. And he is just spectacular. I would follow him anywhere.
It really is astounding, like you're saying, the nitty-gritty that you get into. But I would say it also really shines through. I mean, just for me, I am so blown away by the facts that we learn throughout this, because it's such an education for us. I had no idea some of these things, like the stripes are like barcodes, the male tiger 600 pounds. Obviously, like we learned, like you said, the tiger is one of the standout animals. But for you, what's one of your favorite things that you learned about tigers throughout this process?
You know, I think that it's the sentience. It's watching those eyes. It's watching the thought process. It's seeing the absolute care and the fun that they can have together. I walked into this being an elephant guy. You know, my favorite animal is an elephant. But I have to say, it's tied now. You know, I think the tiger is such an amazing, amazing spirit. There is a spirit that you can see emanating from that amazing beast. And I've kind of fallen in love with them.
Roy, you touched on this a little bit, but some of these shots are
so close on the Tigers. It is easy to fall in love with them because I feel like I'm right there with them. Can you talk a little bit more about what's the trick to filming these animals in the wild and not making your presence known or interfering in their business?
Well, this is the trick, and this is what is so brilliant about our cinematographers and their understanding of nature. 15 years ago, when Disney Nature started, this is our 15th anniversary, by the way, it would have been impossible to actually do this film the way we've done it. Mm-hmm. In fact, it may have been impossible to do the film because the tiger is the most elusive, but it's through a series of camera traps, an amazing piece of technology called the movie Carbon, an amazing camera that is on a base that you can actually control through servos over a mile away. So it's really about setting the cameras and then getting away and being able to watch. That's how we got so close to the den, those incredible shots of the cubs. It's how we were able to get the amazing behavior at the waterhole where they're playing and literally they're looking in at the camera. It's almost as if we gave them direction, you know? And then the camera traps. I think one of the most stunning pieces of film is when Shankar goes into a cave alone and basically tries to go to sleep. And that took a guy going into the cave, setting a camera. So we had scouts. He was able to get in there, set the camera, and then move out. So it's these kinds of things. And without leaving his scent, that's the other thing. These guys are brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant.
That's a high stakes situation.
Oh, yeah. This is not an easy gig. You know? It's always interesting to me that Martin Kolbeck, who's one of the cinematographers, and Tom Walker, who was basically in charge of all of the kind of mechanical stuff that was going on, they've worked, you know, in the field for years. And so their experience really pays off in the end.
It pays dividends, clearly, because as you're describing that, Roy, you are the epitome of a storyteller. I'm on the edge of my seat, covering my mouth in shock of how this was captured. So thank you for the incredible work that you've done on these films. And you kind of mentioned it. You mentioned the 15th anniversary. There is no way that we are not going to acknowledge you're celebrating Big Hero 6's 10th anniversary this year, and we're such big fans. So I have to say, we want to be in a celebratory mood with you. How does it feel to hit this milestone?
Well, Big Hero 6 is a very special film. I won a very special award with it, so that was very, very lovely. I actually celebrated my 30th year at Disney this year, so I've been around for a long time. It's been a lovely, lovely ride, and I have to say, being able to start working on Disney Nature back in 2015, so it's almost 10 years for me that I've been working with Disney Nature, has been a complete honor and joy. And my work in animation has always, we talk about legacy and the idea that I am able to kind of follow in the footsteps of so many people before me and hopefully influence people in front of me, you know. I love what I do. I'm a lucky man. I go to work every day, and it's not really work. It's joy.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And like you said, you're just continuing to forge new frontiers in the spirit of Walt Disney, this incredible legacy that you're building yourself. We've learned so much, and we're really excited about this work. So thank you so much, Roy Conley.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Next up, we're welcoming back friend of D23 Inside Disney and director of the Walt Disney Archives, Becky Klein.
Such a treat every time we get to talk to Becky Klein. She's here to tell us all about Walt Disney and iconic True Life Adventures documentary films he made back in the 1950s, which in no small part inspired the Disney Nature films of today. Becky Klein, director of the Walt Disney Archives, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am great. Thank you, Hunter.
Becky, when I started at Disney like over 7 years ago now, my first shoot was right here in the Archives reading room. So it's so great to be back here with you.
It's so great to have you here amidst our crew again.
So we're talking all about True Life Adventures. Who better to talk about it than Becky Klein? So is it true that 1942's Bambi was one of the reasons that Walt decided to start making True Life Adventure films?
Yeah, that is true in a roundabout way. I think the True Life portion came along a little while later, but it certainly got him interested in doing more with nature films. And I think Bambi was seminal because it came out in 1942. And at that time, that was right, you know, when World War II was going on and there was all kinds of things going on in the U.S. that it was kind of the first time that people were recognizing that fire prevention was so important. And the forest fire in Bambi was a huge element of the story. And he portrayed it so realistically. And oddly enough, right about that time, they were realizing with all the people, the men out in the service and not there in the country, there weren't people there to prevent forestry problems and fires and things. And so the government started focusing on that as a program. There was something they called the CFFP, which was the Cooperative Forest Fire Prevention Program. It was a kind of a home front thing, actually. And it happened right at 1942 when Bambi came out and was such a huge hit that it was very right in the conscience of the public. And so Walt allowed Bambi and the characters Thumper and Bambi and Flower to be used on a promotional poster to prevent forest fires. And this predated Smokey the Bear. Bambi was the first one. And they did this fire prevention thing. It said, "Please, Mister, don't be careless," because I think that was, you know, the idea, man is in the forest.
Yeah, man is in the forest. Yeah, I think I've seen those at California Adventure, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. You have. And it was a 1944 poster that came out with the characters on it, and Walt allowed this CFFP program to use the characters and to encourage the public to be careful with fire prevention, and then, of course, help conserve nature in that way. And so that's kind of where I think he got his social consciousness about it. He was always interested in nature, but I think his social consciousness about conservation and prevention of problems in our natural world came from that Bambi experience. And then it just grew after that. And then by the, you know, a few years later, 6-7 years later, he ended up doing the True Life Adventures. And so I think it was a combination of his early life experiences, his interest in conservation and nature, and then, of course, the wildlife films he saw later, which inspired him to do the True Life Adventures.
Okay, how remarkable is that? I really am astounded because for us as fans of Bambi, you have no idea, right, the context of the world at that time. Like, as we're talking about how he kind of ushered in this new wave of filmmaking with the True Life Adventure series. You know, we live in a time where we're inundated with content, right? Like, we see it all right over. But it's so remarkable to know, obviously, how he kind of was able to naturally evolve into this interest and continue mm-hmm. to build content around it. So that's really, really right. remarkable. You're talking about the fire prevention, which I never even knew, and I'm still amazed that Flower was a part of that campaign. How cool is that? I love that. Yeah. Do you think he knew where he wanted to focus, like on the world and how to conserve the next thing even back then?
Well, I think right about that time in the early 40s, there was so much going on in the world that was negative. And he was focusing on helping the government by making anti-propaganda films, by helping with war front efforts and buying bonds and doing all those things. So he had a very well-developed social conscience at that time to do things to help out the country. And I think that's when he started developing his interest in portraying the natural world. He did it in animation with Bambi. Walt got interested in things for various reasons, and then it always went somewhere interesting. And I think that's what happened with this, is that he was always socially conscious about nature and the wonders of nature. But I think it kind of led him in that direction where he ultimately started nature documentaries. You know, people were doing wildlife films, the Malots and folks like that, but nobody was really doing nature documentaries in a movie theater. And Walt kind of invented the True Life Adventures, became nature documentaries, which everybody does today and we all know them, but Walt kind of invented that genre of filmmaking. And it was because of his interest in the conservation and in early nature forest prevention and, you know, that kind of thing.
Walt Disney was truly a pioneer in every sense of the word.
He was. He was one of those people that just, he was a giant sponge. He absorbed everything and then turned it on its head. He would see things and read about things and learn about things, and then he would immediately find a creative, imaginative way to use that and tell stories.
You mentioned the Malats. I'd love to ask you a little bit about the first true life adventure film, mm-hmm. Seal Island, how that came about. And I've heard a story about what happened after it won the Academy Award.
That's a great story. Yeah, actually in 1948, a few years after Bambi, about 6 years, Walt saw a wildlife film that was done by a married couple, Alfred and Alma Malat, who are both photographers. And they traveled the world together shooting nature. And he saw a wildlife film they did, and so he reached out to them, and he said, I would like to hire you to make a film in Alaska. And it wasn't intended to be a true life adventure or just a nature documentary. It was going to be a film about, you know, America's last frontier, which was Alaska. And so he hired them to go up there and just start filming. And he didn't ask them for anything specific. He just said, go to this place and just start finding stories and start filming. And so they did. And they filmed up there for quite a while. And they decided ultimately not to make Alaska. What they did is they took the portions of the film that were just about nature, were just about the seals in the Pribilof Islands, and separated that out from the footage that they had shot of the Native Americans in Alaska and the Inuit communities and that sort of thing, and sent it all to Walt. And he got very excited about it. And so he decided to make a two-reel short subject film just about the seals and called it Seal Island. His distributor was RKO at the time. We weren't distributing yet by ourselves. But RKO thought, nobody's going to want to sit in a theater and watch a movie about animals. And so they didn't want to distribute it. So Walt said, well, you know, he was a little upset about that. And he says, okay, I'm going to prove him wrong. And he called a friend of his who ran the Crown Theater in Pasadena, California, and asked him to run the film for a week so that it could be eligible for Oscar consideration. Because Walt was really high on this. He thought it was great. And so they ran it for a week, and it qualified. And then, sure enough, it got the Best Documentary Two-Reel Subject Oscar the following year. Soon enough, RKO was distributing the True Life Adventures. And then later, we started Buena Vista Distribution and started distributing our own films. And the first one to be released under that new banner was The Living Desert, which was a true life adventure.
Okay, that's an adventure in and of itself. I mean, how perfect true life adventures. That's incredible. I also just love the tenacity of Walt Disney in that story where you're talking about it. It's like he was getting a no. I also just love that RKO was in the mix of all this. And then he turned it into a yes, and then it circled right back with them, only he had an Oscar in hand at that point. So,
well, right now, three True Life Adventures are available on Disney Plus, I believe. 1953's The Living Desert, 1955's The African Lion, and 1957's Jungle Cat. Do you have any interesting intel about those films in particular?
Well, those particular films, I think probably The Living Desert, because it won the Oscar, is the most recognizable and well-known. And the photography in that film is amazing. But I think my favorite part of that film is that there is they call it the scorpion hoedown. And it's the scorpion mating ritual. And they put it to this, you know, really cheesy hoedown square dance, you know, thing. And it's just hilarious. But the photography in it is brilliant. For the African Lion, that was another one that was done by the Malats. And they went to Africa and spent 3 years shooting that film. And it's got some spectacular stuff in it too. Not just about the lions, but also about all the African animals that are in it. The last one, the Jungle Cat, it's about jaguars in Brazil, in the Amazon. They're beautiful films and they're very spectacular. And because they're nature documentaries, they don't age. You know, if they're shot well and they're high quality photography, they're still gorgeous. And so I highly recommend that people check them out.
This is so incredible. All the different animals, everything that was covered in these early films with the True Life Adventures. Can you chat about how they inspired today's Disney nature films? Because I think for us today, we love them so much.
Yeah, well, there's a direct correlation. Walt made the 14 original True Life Adventures. And then in 2000, his nephew, Roy, who had also worked on some of these animal films that he had done, because he did a lot of other things about nature, which were things like Perry, which was the true life fantasy. But there were also a lot of television programs that were about animals, some very serious and so a couple feature films, but also some really funny, wacky comedies, you know, like Lefty the Ding-a-ling Lynx and Ida the Offbeat Eagle and just odd things like that. But Roy worked on a lot of those. And so he was out in the field working with the photographers and doing these films. And so he loved the True Life adventures. And so in 2000, he made a series of four more that were released. And then shortly after that, somebody else said, well, let's continue making these Disney nature films. And so they just called them Disney Nature. And we're still making them today. And they're just as beautiful. And, you know, with the new technology that they have for making films in digital formats, they're pretty spectacular. And so I think Disney nature films are wonderful.
I loved what you were saying about how the original films really hold up because they're nature films. I really want to see Lefty the Ding-a-ling Lynx. I had not heard of that one. I learned something new every day.
Yeah, it was this weird thing they did for the television show. And it was Walt started it in the 60s and then it kept going after his passing. Everybody laughs because I'm like, yes, there really was, you know, Concho the Misfit Coyote, and there was Salty the Harjacked Harbor Seal, you know, and there's and Sancho the Homing Steer, and it just Cristobalito the Calypso Colt, you know, it was just 100 of them. I don't know if it's 100, but there's at least 20 or 30 of these titles like that, and they were really fun. I watched them as a kid and I loved them.
I can confirm that Becky Cline is not reading these off a list, by the way. She just knows these.
It's like gems.
I've seen them all, too. Seen
these are gems, too. Becky.
Finally, I mean, like we said, Walt was such a pioneer. Can you also speak about any of Walt's other conservation type efforts and how those really galvanized the company's later endeavors, including the Disney Conservation Fund?
Yeah. You know, Walt, from a very early age, was interested in nature. You know, he grew up on a farm. He was a little tiny boy when they moved to the farm in Marceline, like 4. And he used to do what he called belly botany, and where he'd lay on his tummy and look at what was in the grass, and he'd look at the insects, and he'd watch the birds, and he'd just learn about the nature around him. So he was always interested in nature. And then as he got older, he'd read books and things like that, and he found Bambi, the novel by Felix Salten, and was very intrigued by that and made the film. And like I said, that's what got him kind of interested in it. But it was something that he loved his whole life. He, you know, did charitable things. He donated money. He was on boards and things like that to help conservation efforts. And in fact, in 1956, he was honored by being named the honorary chairman of National Wildlife Week, which was a program of the National Wildlife Federation. And so in 1956, they asked him to be the chairman and do some public service announcements. And he did several. And in fact, he stayed on as that. He did that for 10 years. And so every year, he would sponsor the Wildlife Week with a PSA, but they were all on conservation themes. So that was, some of it was about forestry, forest fires, clean water, preserving wildlife, and things like that. But he had a lot of passion about that program and about conserving nature. And you know, all of his, if you look at his library of films, especially the ones he made for television, there are a lot of them about films about forest fires, natural disasters, how to prevent them. And of course, he had an educational program. He was making edited versions of some of these films for educational programs for schools and things like that, and using some of our characters like Donald Duck and Jiminy Cricket to teach, you know, how to prevent an accident in the home, or, you know, how to treat the world around you better. And so I, as a child in the 60s, I saw these in school all the time. That kind of informed our consciousness as a people that we really do need to think twice about things. And of course, now there's a lot more awareness of not just conservation of our natural resources, but, you know, the world around us and how to protect it and keep it safe. One thing I wanted to end with is a quote from Walt, which I think is really awesome. This is from one of his PSAs, and he said, "If certain events continue, much of America's natural beauty will become nothing more than a memory. The natural beauty of America is a treasure found nowhere else in the world. Our forests, waters, grasslands, and wildlife must be wisely protected and used. I urge all citizens to join the effort to save America's natural beauty. It's our America. Do something to preserve its beauty, strength, and natural wealth. And that's pretty much it. You know, Walt did that his whole life, and we're still doing it today.
That's a beautiful legacy. I just really am marveling at all of your knowledge and just to learn even more about Walt Disney and what he was making people aware of then and now what we continue with these Disney nature films and beyond with all the efforts. So thank you so much for the time today, Becky. I'm sure we both are just, I was beaming the whole time. So thank you so much for the time.
Me too.
Well, I am so glad you asked me to come on and speak about something so important. And, you know, it's fun to be with you guys again.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Becky.
Okay, wow. I really am genuinely so blown away by our interviews with Roy and Becky. They were incredible, so knowledgeable, and really just makes me proud of Disney and the efforts like the Disney Conservation Fund. I'm legitimately inspired to do even more to help save the planet.
Roy and Becky are two people that know so much about Disney, and as we found out, they know so much about conservation too. And conservation, that can sometimes feel so daunting, but even just like we were saying, one small action a day can make a big difference. I love that Becky ended on a Walt quote about conservation. I'm going to do the same. As Walt once said, conservation isn't just the business of a few people. It's a matter that concerns all of us.
For more information on how you can help Disney protect the magic of nature, visit DisneyPlanetPossible.com. If you want to chat with us, hashtag D23 Inside Disney. And for all the latest Disney info, check out D23.com.
We'll be back soon with more fantastic guests on an all-new episode of D23
Inside Disney.